And then I met Randy Rhodes. I'd gone out on a bender and I'd come back. And some guys, you've got to see this guy. You've got to see this guy. So I got into this studio. I think it was Diana Strom from Slaughter. So Diana says, come around this studio. I've got this great guitar player. And I was three sheets to the wind, you know. I was like in a coma. So he drags my butt down to this studio. And I go, he pulls my head back. And in the studio, there's this little I thought I was dreaming, like a doll, like a little mannequin. With long blonde hair, playing this guitar, and I said to myself, if this is not a dream, he's got a gig. If it is a dream, I'll be pissed off, because, you know. I went back to England. I left my ex-wife. I lived in a house with Randy for about 18 months, 2 years. Then we went and we met Bob Daisley and Lee Kerslake, and we just had that was so much fun, man. Welcome back in the studio. I'm Ozzy Osbourne with Redbeard. Randy was a guy that knew what... He didn't know what he wanted to play, but he knew he had to search until he found it. I remember when... I remember one instant when we were in Ridge Farm recording studio, and I was having problems with a second verse on Flying High Again. You know, I sing the first verse is one, and I wanted to change the second verse, but have it in the same block, you know? So I was going crazy with that, and he was... I listened to this now. It's like, and you know that? Oh no! That was an accident because I was supposed to double track the oh no, but I came in one bar late and I said leave it, and then it just kind of like overlapped itself and it fitted perfectly. When it came to the guitar solo, Randy was adamant. He says, "Listen, I've been in that studio. I cannot get the solo." He says, "I'm going to go in there now. I am not coming out. I don't want anyone to come in." He says, "I'm not coming out until I get the solo." He spent 3 days and three nights in the studio. Just didn't eat, didn't sleep, then he came out. I always didn't know when he'd got one. He'd come up with this big grin on his face and he would say, "Check this out." My ears flew off. I mean, and my hair flew back. I mean, it was like, wow.
Yeah. The Ozzy Osbourne Randy Rhoads tribute.
It's a great package. I mean,
why did you do it?
Well, Mrs. Rhoads and not myself and the record company have been inundated with millions of letters saying, you know, it's only fair. A lot of us never got to see Randy play. You know, have you got anything else of Randy? And I had no intentions of putting it out. And then Mrs. Rhoads phoned up and she says, you know, do you think it's any good? I said, well, I haven't heard it. You know, if it's okay, then I'll put it out. If it's not, then I think it's bad to put something out which is misrepresentation of Randy. It's, you know, so I heard it. And I was bowled over with it. And I said to Max, no, Max, just go and mix it. I don't want it to sound like it's been doctored. Just mix it as it is, you know. Like I want it to sound like a gig instead of, like, there's so many phonies that go and make a live album in a studio and stick a crowd on it. And that's really not the case with this at all. In fact, it's not all one show either. It's different shows all over the place that we played, you know, all over Canada and England and all over what I've considered the best stuff that I had, and believe you me, this is the end of it. Some people think that I have a secret Randy Rhoads tape from the studio stuffed in my attic, and I have loads of different things. This is the absolute end of what I have. Whether other people have something of him, I don't know, but this is all I have.
So this album is now available in the studio, in the stores, and this was one that came from the streets. I mean, this wasn't your idea. There was a demand for this before the record existed.
Just the amount, and when we did the packaging, I said that I didn't want it to be morbid. There's a lot of interesting information on Randy and myself and the early days, even before I was with Randy. Like, there's photographs that his mother got to put on the album cover. So it's a very colourful album sleeve. With things of when he was a kid, when he was growing up, what he likes and what his hobbies were, and as he grew through his life. And the guy was 25 when he died. It was a tragic day in my life. It's not a day goes by when I don't think about him. Every year we send flowers to his on the anniversary, and it's just to me, he still lives on through this album. It's a really personal album to me. It's something that I will always treasure for the rest of my life, and it's really a collector's item.
Thank you.
I've heard portions of this story throughout our long relationship, but I've never heard the whole story. And I would like you to tell me and everyone listening to Q102 the story of Randy Rhoads. I want you to tell me when you ever first heard that name or heard that guitar or how it was brought to your attention.
Well, I'd left Black Sabbath, and I was living in an apartment in Los Angeles, and I thought it was all over. I never went out that door for 3 or 4 months. I stayed in the hotel, didn't even open the curtain, just stayed there. And then one day, my then manager, who's now my wife, Sharon, came around and said, "We want to manage you, but you've got to prove yourself. You've got to prove you got something to offer. And, you know, we believe in you, but you're just lying here, drinking beer and doing nothing. You're just fading away, you know." So I started the laborious task of auditioning players, and I'd never auditioned anyone in my life. Sabbath just got together. We were 4 guys from the same town. So, I mean, I was thinking at the time, how the hell can I say, you know, good if you can pick up a guitar? You've got to be good, you know, whatever. And I went to all these different guitar players in Los Angeles, and the guy who introduced me to Randy is quite interesting, actually, because his name is Dana Strum, and he now plays bass for Vinnie Vincent.
Okay, yeah.
And he said, "I got this fantastic guitar player." I said, "You must see him." I said, "Well, when can I see him?" He said, "He's coming around to the studio tonight. I don't know what time, maybe 1, 2, or 3 in the morning." I said, "Man, you know, I said, it's a bit late. You know, I'm probably wrecked by 10 o'clock. It's time for bed for me. I'll be drunk or something." So anyway, I crawled myself around to the studio, and I passed out on the couch, and Diana come in and woke me up. She says, "Oh, he's here." And I said, "I'll tell him, forget it." I said, "You know, another day." She said, "No, you got to listen to this guy." So I crawled up into the control room, and this little weedy little skinny guy came in. At first, I thought it was a woman. You know, I said, "I can't have any women in my band. You know, it won't look right. You know, not that I'm against having women guitar, because there's some pretty good guitar players out there that are female." But anyway, I heard this guy play, and I honestly thought at first that they were playing it on a tape recording. I didn't think it was this guy playing, because this big sound came out of this little guy. I mean, it's unbelievable. I said, "Well, you know, come round tomorrow." And he came round to the hotel. We got chatting, and we just hit it off. And about 3 months later, I took him to England, and where we started writing with Bob Daisley. And then after a long, laborious task of trying to find a drummer, we came up with Lee Kerslake. And that was the original lineup.
Who used to be with Uriah Heep?
Yeah.
Good drummer.
Randy Rhoads, Bob Daisley, do me and Lee Kerslake, and those first two albums were done virtually back to back. You know, we just went in and recorded everything we got. You know, and it was a lot of fun in the early tours we did together. I mean, it was memorable times, like getting right back to the roots again, because I'd been with Black Sabbath for so many years, and it was all 5-star hotels and limousines. And to get back right back to the roots, all everybody on a bus just touring around was great. You know. And then we sort of came to him, and everything was getting better and better. We were getting success and acclaim, and it was great, because I thought after leaving Black Sabbath, my career was dead, and to get back up again for the second time, it was just magic. And then we came to America, and we just worked and worked and worked, you know, did in stores, radios, TVs, as much as we could to let people know we were around. And there was publicity that I didn't really plan, but, you know, like the Bats and the Alamo and all the rest of it came along, which... it's not something that I'm proud of, but nevertheless, it was there, and it did wake a lot of people up to the fact that I was still alive and I was still playing music, and people were picking up to my new music. And then it went on and on, and, you know, until Randy got killed in Orlando, Florida. Then it just seemed to sort of go haywire for a bit. But after that, you know, at the time of the death of Randy, I remember my wife, I sent to Sharon, "It's all over, you know, let's pack up and go home." And she says, "No, we cannot do that, you know, because if Randy was living, he wouldn't like that. He would urge you to go on." And God bless a lot of friends I have in the business, that a lot of people came to my assistance, and a lot of people phoned in and said, you know, funnily enough, Journey, the guys from Journey, I've never really met the guys apart from many years ago, phoned up and said, "Can we do anything? Do you need anything? Can we help you?" And I thought that was really nice. And ACDC. ACDC phoned up and says, "Yeah, man, we understand what it's like. We went through the same thing with Bun and all
right,
the rest.
Right.
If we can help, give us a call." And that's when you know that, you know, there are still people out there that do care and do, you know, back you all up, you know. Because, it's a business that has not that many people doing it in a successful way. And it's so nice when other people come around and sort of hold you up for a while, you know?
It's wonderful, and that's unfortunately, it's a time of really stress and duress that we find out what we're made of and who are we.
Flying high, so keep on smoking them joints.
Ozzy Osbourne remembers the late Randy Rhoads.
This guy was something very, very special, to the point that when he first joined me, and you can ask Bob Daisley if you ever see him, and he'll verify this. I turned around to Bob Daisley one day, I says, you know what? I got this weird feeling.
I don't really think this guy's going to make old bones. I just got a feeling. He didn't drink a lot. He didn't take drugs. He smoked cigarettes. He was dedicated to his instrument. I mean, totally. I mean, the guy would every day off on the road, we'd be busting our chops living on a bus. He'd get to the hotel, pick up the Yellow Pages and get a classical guitar teacher to come around and give him a lesson, you know. I mean, the guy was one. But I had this weird feeling that he wouldn't make old bones, you know. Believe me, I'm not just because if he was a creep, I'd have said, well, you know, the guy had it coming because he was an asshole anyway. But he wasn't. But you know, he was a special, very special person. I like to think that he was too good for this world.
I know it's painful, and I know you did this once before with me in another town at another time. But to get the record straight, because there was a lot of unfair things written immediately after this terrible accident. There was more than just Randy on that plane. Where were you and why was that plane up there?
What happened was we did a gig in Knoxville, Tennessee, and we'd driven through the night from Knoxville, and we were going to do a show with Foreigner down in Orlando. And as it happens, the Buzz Depot is in Orlando, and we had to stop off at the depot to get some parts for the Buzz. I think it was a Jack or something. And I'd gone to bed very late that night. I was talking to Randy till about the early hours of the morning. We were talking about, because he wanted to do his idea was to go to college and get a degree in classical music. And I said, well, you know, wait until the end of the tour and we'll talk again. We were just having a general rap, you know. And I went to bed at the back of the bus with my wife. The next minute I know, I'm woken up with this almighty bang on the bus. It's like a terrific explosion. And I looked down the other end of the bus, and there was all this broken glass down the other end of the bus. And I said to Sharon, we've had an accident. I'm still thinking we're on the freeway. So I run down the bus. I look out the window. And we're in the middle of a field, and I'm thinking, I don't know where the hell I am. And I run back, put some pants on, grabbed my wife, and got off the bus. And the bus was virtually cut in half. And what had happened was the driver of the bus also had a private pilot's license, and that is a smaller airstrip on the bus depot. It's a big area, you know. So he took the guys up to take an aerial photograph of the bus and whatever, and he made an error with one of his judgments and clipped the side of the bus with the wing of the plane and exploded into this big house. And the autopsy said that Randy was killed instantaneously. So, I mean, it's tragic that he went, but it's nice to know that he didn't suffer at all.
Now, there was, besides your bus driver, who was the pilot of the plane, and Randy Rhodes.
Sharon's seamstress woman, a black lady, had worked with Sharon for like many, many years. She was like a second mother to Sharon. And she was a 58-year-old woman with a heart problem. So she wasn't, I got all these rumors that one of your Aussie's practical joke went wrong and all the rest. I mean, there was no clowning around by any of the people because, I mean, Rachel, she's 58, she's got a heart murmur. She's hardly wanting to do loop-the-loops and things at that age and with that condition of her heart. It was just a tragic one. I mean, it happens all the time. It's just one of these tragic mistakes that does happen. And I was very angry for a long while. And I'll tell you a funny thing, you know. I hadn't heard these tapes for 5 years, and Mrs. Rose had phoned up my wife and said, you know, she's been inundated with letters from fans and people finding out where she is and going around to her house. And we'd had lots of letters also. The record company had also. And so I said, well, I haven't heard the tapes. And to hear these tapes, it sent a shiver through me. I've had various guitar players since playing the same kind of licks, but no one plays it the same as the original. It's like the Hendrix thing, you know. I've heard people that you'd swear blind if you close your eyes, you could see Hendrix playing. But when you hear the real thing being played by the real person, there's something there that's never nobody ever can capture.
Take a bite and drown your sorrows. Then it floods.
It's like the Ozzy Osbourne School of Rock and Roll.
It really has been. You have been the the Ted Mack Amateur Hour of Rock and Roll, where people have unknowns.
I always wonder, people say, why do you always go for the unknowns? And I think, I got this funny theory that if you want to be better than somebody, it's great. But then beat, and I always like to get somebody that's so unknown, that rather than go and get a name guitar player.
Don't you think it's because they're hungry?
Yeah, they're hungry. It's like when I was a kid, there was a soccer player that we all wanted to be as good as. It's so good for a young kid to come up and be better than that person, And it's great to see these kids who haven't got a clue develop into some person. Like Jake, when Jake joined me, he was just an innocent guy. Now he's a leader on his own. He doesn't need me anymore. And it's time for a change, The thing is, I like to think that through my career, I've sort of given birth to so many new bands indirectly. Like Night Ranger, Brad played with me for a year. He went out back to Night Ranger. They had big success and whatever, I'm not saying I'm going to get Brad Gillis back, but that's the kind of thing. Jake will now, no doubt, get his own thing and have the success and whatever. And when the guitar player or whoever it may be wants to go, it's no use trying to keep them. People say to me, some guy just phones, please don't ever get separate from Jake. The thing is, it happens, and it's healthy that it happens. I mean,
it's called growth.
It's growth, man. That's exactly what it is, growth. And I would never like to. I mean, I was with Black Sabbath for 11 years, and I didn't really want to be there. And I was scared to move because I thought that if I moved, then everything would fail. And I learned the biggest lesson in my life, that life is so short, that if you want to go for something, go with all your heart, Just don't ever think, well, maybe, but if I leave and fail, then people are going to forget me. If you'll never know if you're going to fail. If you sit there where you are, where you are now, and you're indirectly, you're failing there anyway because you're not making any moves.
Yeah, you're stagnant.
Sure.
You know.